So we're continuing now with batch number 5 of local news and features. We've got 4 more news stories for you. It's Tim and Uta. Uta's going to give you your headlines first.
I started off with 40 peacocks terrorising a Staffordshire village. And then we have the Shelton Gang, which is jailed for 16 years for running the tea and Rocky drugs lines.
Okay, and my headlines are landlady chasing unpaid rent turns up at home to find a £63,000 cannabis farm and a time capsule buried at the old Royal Infirmary exactly 100 years ago is to be opened. So over to Uta, who's going to do the first story for us in batch 5.
I should do a squawk. It's squawking gang of 40 peacocks terrorising once peaceful Staffordshire village. Well, residents of a quaint Staffordshire village have told of their hell at being terrorised by a flock of 40 peacocks, which destroy their gardens and keep them awake past 2 a.m. The noisy birds have been ruffling feathers in Tutbury to the point where council bosses have now issued a warning urging people not to feed them. Fed-up locals say the peacocks trample their plants, leave droppings on driveways and vehicles, and can be heard squawking from between 5 a.m. to 2 a.m. the next morning. Villagers say the pesky flock has become an invasion of their privacy as they regularly climb on rooftops as well as munching on their vegetable patches. Retired dinner lady Marion West, 71, said, "They're a bit of a pain. They're up half the night squawking and keep you awake. I squirt them with a water pistol if they come near me. If you're not careful, they poo everywhere and it's such a mess. They eat your flowers too. They're a pain in the backside. And when they walk on your roof, it sounds like you've got burglars." Another local resident who did not wish to be named said, "They're an absolute nuisance, making noise first thing in the morning. When I moved here 12 years ago, there was one peacock and a peahen, and now there's well over 20. They gather on the roofs and they keep us all awake. They're absolutely terrible. We thought they were owned by Tutbury Castle, but apparently the owners have denied all knowledge." Another unnamed resident added, "They're such a nuisance, getting all on your plants and making a mess everywhere. I mean, they are lovely birds, but when they're up at 5:30 a.m. squawking, you don't need that. The other night, they were noisy until 2 a.m. and then back here at 5:30 a.m. the next day. For the people that take photos, they're fine and lovely, but not when you live with them. As to who owns them, I don't think anyone really knows." But Heather Hunter-Harris, 63, who has been living in the area for more than 16 years, said the peacocks were part of Tutbury's charm. She said, "They're all right, they're loud and they're up early, but most birds are. They're cheeky, and if they can get food out of you, they will, but I just don't feed them. But the peacocks have always been in Tutbury. I feel like if you take those out, you're taking Tutbury away. People come here to see the peacocks, and when they put their tails up, it looks lovely. You've just got to be tolerant, keep out of their way, and let them get on with it." Tutbury Parish Council has now encouraged villagers not to feed the peacocks, as it makes them harder to deter after admitting they had become a serious problem. Council Chair Francis Crossley said he believed there were 26 peacocks during the council's last count, but there could be now up to 40. He added, "As a parish council, we haven't really taken a view as they are not ours. Some people love them, but some people can't bear them. It's a marmite situation. They're nice to hear in the background, but not outside your house. They wouldn't attack anyone, but when they see their reflection, they do peck, like if they see a reflection in a car. They roam around and eat vegetables growing if they aren't covered up. And they are up as soon as it's daylight. We just ask the people, don't feed them, as neighbours are being disturbed by them. I can understand people's frustration if they end up on your roof because your neighbour is feeding them." So that is now over to you, Tim.
Interesting story, that one. So my next one now is landlady chasing unpaid rent, turns up at the home or her home to find £63,000 cannabis farm. Cannabis grower Paul Johnson has been jailed nearly 3 years after his grow was discovered. The 38-year-old rented a house in St Michael's Road, Chell, and converted it into a cannabis factory with 60 plants across 2 bedrooms and the loft. The plants, which were about 4 weeks away from maturity, had a potential value of £63,000 if sold in 1 gram street deals. The defendant returned to the address and told police, "You have got me." Now Johnson has been jailed for 4 years at Stoke-on-Trent Crown Court. Prosecutor Fiona Cortes said that the defendant was a tenant at a house in St Michael's Road. The owner visited the property on June the 22nd, 2022, as she wanted to speak to Johnson over overdue rent. But she discovered the front door lock had been changed, and she gained entry at the back of the house and saw that it had been converted into a cannabis factory with a total of 60 plants, 20 in both upstairs bedrooms and 20 in the loft. Miss Cortez said that the estimated yield of the 40 plants in the bedrooms was 4.2 kilograms with a potential value of between 14,000 and 16,000 if sold wholesale, and between 27,000 and 30,000 if sold in 1 ounce deals. The 20 cannabis plants in the loft had a potential yield of 2.1 kilograms with a potential value of 7,000 to 8,000 wholesale, and between 13,500 and 15,000 pounds if sold in 1 ounce deals. Miss Cortez said that the defendant returned to the address while the police were present. He identified himself as living there and said, "You've got me." Asked what he meant, he said, "Because of what's in there." Johnson of Johnson Place, Feg Hayes, pleaded guilty to production of a Class B drug. The court heard that he has previous convictions for possession with intent to supply cannabis in 2011 and 2016. Rashad Mohammed, who was mitigating, said that the defendant had been a cannabis user for many years. He said Johnson began growing cannabis for himself, but the operation grew. He said the plants were several weeks away from being harvested. Mr. Mohammed added that Johnson is a carer for his brother and has kept out of trouble for a number of years. Recorder Robert Smith told Johnson this was a professional grow, a full majority. The prosecution expert estimated a total yield of just over 6 kilograms with a street value, if sold in 1 gram deals, in the region of £63,000. The cannabis you were growing was worth tens of thousands of pounds. This was an operation capable of growing commercial quantities of cannabis for onward supply, and this was your operation. In my judgment, this was a highly professional setup. So over to Uta, who's going to do the next story for us in Batch 5.
The story is about topping up your story with drugs, because the Shelton gang, jailed for 16 years for running the T and Rocky drugs lines, seems to have found an end now. 4 Stoke-on-Trent gang members running the T and Rocky drugs lines have been jailed for a total of 16 years. Khalid Hamidi, age 23, Issa Iqbal, age 23, Ahmed Ibn Omar, age 22, and Hassan Mir, age 20, plotted together to deal thousands of pounds worth of heroin and crack cocaine. Stoke-on-Trent Crown Court heard how the 4 criminals operated 2 drug lines in Stoke-on-Trent and Crewe between May and September 2023, sending out 8,155 messages to 91 known drug users across the neighbouring areas. A drug expert witness examined the communications and estimated the group made at least £6,000, although it is thought the real total could be much higher. But the sophisticated operation came crashing down after Iqbal's vehicle was searched in September 2023, leading to the seizure of a phone used to contact drug users. Police were then able to unravel the plot and apprehend each of the conspirators. Ibn Omar, along with accomplice Mir, were already on bail for a previous drug offence committed in Chester in January 2023. when the two approached an undercover officer and asked if he'd like to buy any flake. Prosecutor Marcel Ness said the evidence in this case has largely been recovered by mobile phones seized by officers. There was a number of messages sent out to a drugs line in Crewe and another in Stoke-on-Trent. The seized phone contained a tick list of users. It also contained a Telegram group chat. All four defendants were shown to be part of the group chat. This collective operation was quite unique. There was no traditional hierarchy as commonly seen in drug dealing cases. Each member of the group pooled their resources and played an equal role in furthering the conspiracy. Hamidi of Newcastle Street Shelton, Iqbal of Havelock Place Shelton, Ibn Omar of Wellesley Street Shelton, and Mir of Newlands Street Shelton each pleaded guilty to being concerned in the supply of Class A drugs. Balbir Singh, mitigating for Hamidi, said, after being evicted by his landlord, he had to go into emergency accommodation. And at the same time, his wife fell pregnant. This isn't a man who got into drug dealing for the lifestyle. It was done out of concern for his family. He's made a massive mistake and he has learned from it. Sukhdev Garcha, mitigating for Iqbal, said, he is keenly into creating music and making videos, a career which he thought would set him up for life. And when this didn't work out, he fell into depression and began using cocaine. He was then made to start dealing to pay off his drug debt. Harbinder Lali, mitigating for Ibn Omar, said, he showed immaturity and poor decision-making. He was naive. The fact he was caught on bail shows his immaturity. There are people higher up in the chain who never get caught, while young men often do. Robert Holt, mitigating for Mir, said, he made poor choices and demonstrated poor judgment, looking for financial gain. Money was tight in his household at the time, and Mr. Mir has been very candid about this offending. Recorder Robert Smith jailed Hamidi and Iqbal for 3 years, while he put Ibn Omar and Mir away for 5 years. He also ordered the seizure of all cash raised from the illegal enterprise. Recorder Smith said, you have each entered guilty pleas and tried to minimize your respective involvement, but it is clear that you were all drug dealing. You all went into this with your eyes wide open. Heroin and crack ruin lives. They leave users desperate, communities deprived, and families ruined. People often turn to crime to fund their addictions. Dealing drugs causes abject misery in this city every day.
Thank you for that. So my final story now for batch number 5 is Time Capsule was buried at the Old Royal Infirmary exactly 100 years ago and is now to be opened as part of the centenary celebrations. A century old-time time capsule unearthed by staff working at the former North Staffordshire Royal Infirmary is to be opened as part of Stoke-on-Trent's centenary. The lead box, or lead box, buried during King George V's visit on June 5th, 1925, was discovered in 2018, 6 years after the closure of the hospital. It was located behind a foundation stone laid by the then monarch great-grandfather to King Charles during his visit to the Potteries, when he also granted the infirmary its royal decree. Now, exactly 100 years on, the box's secrets are to be revealed as Stoke-on-Trent marks its big birthday. Mark Porter, Estates Manager for University Hospitals of North Midlands, which runs the Royal Stoke, was part of the team to rescue the time capsule and the first to touch the lead box since King George V. He said that we were aware that there may be a time capsule on the Royal Infirmary site following extensive research into its history. During the period following its closure in 2012, we were experiencing problems with trespassers in the derelict buildings, so we knew that we needed to find and secure the capsule. After more research, we located it behind a foundation stone laid by King George V on the 5th of June. He added that once the foundation stone was removed, he and the team discovered a stone slate on top of the time capsule. As soon as we moved the stone and the slate, we immediately saw a sealed lead box, which was the time capsule. It's hard to believe that I was the first person to touch the box since King George V, he added. The lead box was then sat sealed under Mark's desk at the Royal Stoke before it was transferred to the Potteries Museum and Art Gallery in Henley and kept in their sealed vault until the right time and occasion to open it. Fast forward to 2025 and we are now at 100 years old, so it's so exciting that we can now officially open the time capsule and let people know about it, Mark said. Dr. Simon Constable, the UHNM Chief Executive Officer, said, "This is an extraordinary discovery and adds a new chapter of history of the Royal Stoke University Hospital and the wider University Hospitals of North Midlands NHS Trust. The time capsule is a poignant reminder of the hospital's vital role in Stoke-on-Trent's history as we create modern, sustainable NHS services in Stoke. We're proud to honour the legacy of those who shaped health services over a century ago. The time capsule was opened on June the 5th, exactly 100 years after it was buried." Keep listening. We've got some more stories coming up for you in batch number 6.